Hey, everybody, welcome to the Super Bowl edition of Viewing Angles, the only movie and sports podcast on the face of the earth. With me, as always, it's me first, Dan Leo, your host. And who's this strapping young man right beside me?
I'll tell you what, it's me, Robert Mecki, the B host. I had a joke and I lost it, but we're going to keep going because that's what right we do. We push forward.
Yeah, I'm just here to psych Robert out of all of his jokes. And it's been working for 39 episodes. Is that how many we're at?
Nope, but, you know, approximately.
How many episodes have we done? I feel like it's got to be close to that, right?
This is episode 38, I believe.
Ah, damn it.
All I know, right. Well, so close.
Well, you know, if you count the off-the-books Christmas special we did by ourselves.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about the lost episode. So including the lost episode, you're right.
No, the lost episode is still included in the count, I think. I think the lost episode is episode 16. So if you go into the directory, it's like 15, 17.
Yeah, it's kind of like when you go into an elevator.
Yeah.
And you see it goes from 12 to 14. There's no 13th floor in any building.
Yeah, there's actually a 13th floor in the building that I work in.
Oh, that's unfortunate. I hope you don't work on the 13th floor.
If I did, I wouldn't be here. I'd be dead.
Exactly. Nobody right. actually works or, on the 13th worse. Floor.
Yeah, they would have killed me with a velvet buzzsaw.
Ooh, got him.
Whoa, 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 whoa. If you haven't guessed already, we're going to be reviewing the new Netflix original movie from writer, director Dan Gilroy, famous for Nightcrawler and Roman J. Israel Esquire.
Did you see
Dan
that?
Dan Gilroy. Nope.
Neither did I.
Yeah. So, but now I guess this makes a lot more sense that you think like Roman J. Israel was probably a flop. You're like, maybe he's just out of it. Like, no.
Yeah, he'll take any deal he can get. Yeah.
Right. Well, if you could have told me the guy who wrote and directed Nightcrawler, whose brother's with Tony Gilroy, would end up making a movie with Denzel Washington and then a movie with Jake Gyllenhaal as like a pretentious art critic, and they'd both be like whatever movies, I wouldn't have believed you.
I actually didn't even know. I mean, it makes perfect sense now, but I had no idea that Dan Gilroy was brothers with Tony Gilroy.
Yeah, I mean, he's got to look like an idiot now when like Tony is like, hey, you know, I saw your Velvet Buzzsaw movie and it's like, it was all right, but have you seen Michael Clayton recently?
Right, yeah. Dude, he is living in that shadow hardcore.
Yeah, Tony Gilroy he's done a lot.
He's a talented guy.
He's a very talented screenwriter, and his brother Dan is a weirder looking, worse screenwriter.
To be fair, Tony Gilroy also wrote The Bourne Legacy, though, so it's not like he's a perfect writer.
Right, but didn't he wrote that after writing all of the other Bourne movies?
Yes. I don't know why he did, though. He should have stopped.
Yeah.
He's pulling a J.K. Rowling, or he tried to, back in 2012.
Yeah. Oh, and I think I heard a story that, like, Tony Gilroy, he's got some kind of credit on Rogue One because they basically sent him the script and were like, all right, can you help us out with this? And he's like, this is such a fucking mess that I cannot even begin. And they're like, we'll pay you $1 million. And he's like, all right.
That's Star Wars money.
Figure this out.
I'm curious to see. I wonder what the initial draft of Rogue One looked like.
It was probably 10 pages long. It's like, Bothan spies steal the plans for the Death Star.
It was just the title.
Bothan's aliens.
It's just the title of Rogue One, the title script by whoever the original writers were. And then underneath Chris that White's title card was a copy of Black Hawk Down on DVD.
That's not a... Honestly, if Rogue One were more like Black Hawk Down, it would... And Rogue One is a perfectly fine movie.
I like Rogue One.
Capital F and fine. It's complete... I feel like I cannot remember a single thing that happened in Rogue One.
I just like it because of Mads Mikkelsen. I love Mads Mikkelsen. And I also really like it because it's such a clever way of filling in, like, not a plot hole in the original Star Wars, but just, like, a pretty convenient method of destruction for the Death Star.
Like, great retcon.
Okay. Yeah.
Top tier retcon. I don't know if they needed a 2.5 hour long movie. But we did. I'll tell you what, we got out that Darth Vader scene at the very end, and that was worth the price of admission.
The crazy thing is, that was a last minute addition too.
I bet Tony Gilroy came in and it's like, you gotta add something.
You gotta add some sort of fan service.
Yeah. Oh, what a great scene.
I bet you Amazing. Tony. I bet you Tony Gilroy wrote all of Forrest Whitaker's dialogue in that movie.
Maybe. Maybe he definitely wrote someone's dialogue. He probably like
that is what screenwriters do.
They do. Well, most of the time, right? Let's stop riffing on the different Gilroys, because I think there's one more actually.
We'll get deeper into the Gilroys. Yeah,
isn't like John Gilroy a Gilroy brother?
I would believe you. I'm not going to verify it, but I would believe you if you told me that John Gilroy was one of their brothers.
Oh wow. Okay, so John Gilroy is twin brothers with Dan Gilroy, and he's an editor who's worked on Michael Clayton, The Bourne Legacy, Warrior, Pacific Rim, Nightcrawler. So he's worked on, you know, the Gilroy family stuff. Man. Oh, he also edited Billy Madison.
That's an account. Man, we are just up to our gills in Gilroy references and riffs.
Ooh, yeah. All right. I like that. I like that riff.
I got more where that came from.
Well, you know who doesn't have more where that came from? The box office.
Ouch.
It was the lowest box office since August 2017, which, first of all, is not that weird of a record. It's like the first one since like 2 years ago. I'm like, like a year and a half ago.
Yeah. I wonder like what movies were out that weekend, though, that it was so low.
August 2007. Yeah, I don't know why I said the date like I would suddenly know what came out in August 2017. The Nice Guys, maybe?
No, I feel like that was in May. That was earlier in the year. I was going to say it could be Suicide Squad, because Suicide Squad make bank.
Right. So I feel like Suicide Squad on its first weekend made more than all three of these movies did this weekend.
Oh, yeah. It made not a single one of these movies broke $10 million this weekend. And for the record, go ahead.
Glass at first, 9.5 million, then The Upside, 8.6, and then Miss Bala, Gina Rodriguez? Like,
yeah, is that Michelle Rodriguez's little sister?
No, you know what? I don't think they're related. I think that Gina Rodriguez, she's in Jane the Virgin, I believe. She's actually from Chicago.
Oh, really? I thought that was America Ferreira. That was Jane the Virgin.
No, she was in Ugly Betty, and she's in Superstore. Oh,
yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Ugly Betty is what I was thinking of. I don't watch TV. Yeah, no. I get these shows confused easily.
You're right. You do not watch TV. I can attest to that you have never seen a TV show.
I have never seen a TV show except Scrubs.
Right. There are worse ways to live. So obviously this is just like we're gearing up for the first big weekend of February, which is Valentine's Day weekend. That's usually when you get like the first big box office coming in. And I think we have a lot of stuff coming out next weekend, right? We've got Alita Battle Angel. We've got the Lego Movie, the second one.
Yeah, so we have the Lego Movie
Cold
2.
Cold Pursuit.
Yeah, we have Lego Movie 2 coming out this weekend, Cold Pursuit coming out this weekend, and then What Men Want, which is a remake of What Women Want, starring Tiffany Haddish instead of Mel Gibson.
Yeah, which, no, it's Taraji P. Henson.
Oh, okay. Taraji P. Henson.
You're 0 for 2 on Women of Color actors today, Rob.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry.
It's okay. We'll start talking about bland Netflix TV shows so you can get the white guys wrong, too.
Exactly. Hey, I know who Charlie Cox is.
He is a person, definitely. Yeah. I really want to see What Men Want because I love What Women Want. I think it's...
Oh, God.
That's a very guilty pleasure movie for me.
Oh, Jesus.
Because if you have, like, if you could take people, because a lot of people don't know about this movie, I think.
What Men Want?
The first one. What Women Want. And if you start telling people, hey, Mel Gibson was in a movie about 20 years ago where he was so chauvinistic that some kind of spell made him hear women's thoughts so he could understand women better.
Yeah.
Like, wild concept. And it works. I rewatched it within the last 6 months, and it holds up pretty well. You'd be surprised.
I think I would be surprised. I feel like I have no faith in that movie. And I remember this movie because I had a friend. I had one of those friends growing up who only had like 6 VHS tapes in his house. And so when we would sleep over, we would have to choose like one of 6 VHS tapes just to put on and fall asleep to. And one of them was either like What Women Want or Tommy Boy. Like, those were the two most common choices. So I've seen
two,
yeah,
very different movies, I guess.
Very. But I've seen this movie multiple times. I don't remember a single goddamn thing about it other than it's starring Mel Gibson. And
it's peak Mel Gibson. Like, this is Mel Gibson at his like peak of box office power.
Yeah, he was a sex icon. He was a sex symbol.
Yeah, and he was kind of older too. So it was like, interesting.
Yeah. About to break that Silver Fox mold.
Right. And then he went and got crazy, and now he's back. I hope Mel Gibson has a cameo in this movie, but I feel like he won't.
Probably not. But I don't know. I don't know who's financing this movie. I don't know what his connections are.
Yeah. And this movie looks like it. Say what you will about What Women Want, but it's a fully fleshed out idea that it has something to say about something. This movie looks like dog shit. Like, what? Yeah. I haven't seen it, so I shouldn't make any judgment. But What Men Want looks really bad. And I think it'll, like, what's worse? It'll look really bad when in the future people are like, well, we've got this What Women Want, and then we've got What Men Want, and What Women Want is starring Mel Gibson, and that one is better.
That's the better film. I've only seen like the 15-second YouTube trailers for What Men Want, and they're all the same fart joke, and I'm just like, oh wow, this movie's a thing that's actually happening in 2019.
It's happening literally next, like in 3 days,
yeah,
this movie comes out.
So let it be known, I'm going to see the Lego Movie 2 instead.
Yeah, I'll be seeing Cold Pursuit.
I will also be seeing Cold Pursuit.
Yeah, I don't want to see The Prodigy. Man, that looks scary for no reason. I hate kids
movies. It looks like a bad movie.
Yeah, it's like, look at this scary kid.
Yeah, kids are
inherently
like, scary, right? Yeah,
kill that kid.
Lock him in a closet. Throw him down the well.
Whatever it takes, just
yeah, get rid of him.
Yeah, if a kid is like coming to me in the middle of the night and his face starts like changing and stuff, I'm throwing him out the window immediately.
No hesitation.
Like, yeah, the cops come by like, Mr. Leo, what happened here? He just jumped through the window. That's plate glass, sir. Yeah, I know.
I was impressed. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. He broke his neck going out. All right. That's. We haven't even got to talk about other things yet.
What other things do you want to talk about, Dan?
We've got the high, we've got the toss-ups, we got the lows. The highs are pretty good. The high is Bobby Iger.
The
big old dude over at Fox, who said that Deadpool and Alien will continue with all other R-rated entries after the merger. So what we were afraid of is that Disney, after it bought Fox, was going to kidify these franchises and make them PG-13 because Disney likes making money, and PG-13 things make more money typically than R-rated fare.
Yeah. Also, for the record, Bob Iger is the CEO of Disney, not Fox.
Oh, wait, did I say he was Fox? Yeah. Disney. So, and Bob Iger would never lie to us, right?
Never. Bob Iger is an honest man. That's why his nickname in the industry is Honest Bob.
Right. He's definitely cares about us and not his shareholders.
Yes. Believe it.
So how long until we get a PG-13 Alien movie?
Have we
within
not?
Within the next 10 years.
I mean, Alien vs. Like. Predator is already a PG-13 Alien movie.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah.
So it's not like there's a precedent set already for these films. Like, there's already PG-13 Deadpool, PG-13 Alien, but neither one of those made as much money as like their R-rated counterparts. And I think it's just a sound financial decision on Iger's part to say like, yeah, these franchises have to be rated R to continue making any type of money.
Yeah, and I think hopefully that will open up the floodgates to have more movies under the Disney umbrella of properties be R. If they're like, hey, you know, you're going to let Deadpool and Alien be R, like, let's, you know, give Blade a shot. Or
exactly.
Whatever.
Please give Blade a shot. Give Moon Knight a shot. Reboot the Punisher. Just give me a Marvel Knights film division. I want yeah. Marvel's R-rated films to come back.
Right. I want to have like a Marvel division that's like Blumhouse is just take like a lot of like low budget stuff.
Yeah.
Make it R and good. And yeah.
Everything's like a $50 million budget or below. And it's the Marvel branding. So, you know, it's going to make like at least $100 million domestically.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Give me that.
I think that is the lesson here. I think that. And maybe Disney is about to learn its lesson from all the flops that are. I mean, Solo didn't even really flop. It still made a decent amount of money.
It was
like super expensive.
$500 million globally. So, like, yeah. But again, it was disappointing for a franchise as popular and powerful as Star Wars.
Right. It also came out at like a really weird week.
I can't believe.
I think it competed with Deadpool, right?
Yeah. So it came out the week, or I think it came out 2 weeks after Infinity War. And then like a week before Deadpool, I'm just like, I don't know why they did that. Like, why not just wait until December of 2018 and release? Like they did it with Rogue One and it worked fine. Rogue One made like almost $1 billion at the box office, if not
made
more.
Over $1 billion. Yeah.
I don't know why they didn't just do that with. So I feel like Solo would have done fine if they just released it in the Star Wars month.
Yeah, definitely. And we had like a few bare weekends in December where it could have taken up all of the slack that it's like, oh, nothing's coming out this weekend. Go see something that might be nominated for an Oscar later.
Yeah.
Like, all right. But the people want to see the blockbusters around Christmas.
Yeah. I mean, so its competition could have been Mortal Engines. Like, that's what Solo's competition could have been.
Right.
Jeez. I don't know what they were thinking.
Who knows, man?
Yeah.
So that's a high, is that we've got some promise of continuity for some good franchises that hopefully stay with that. And we've got the toss up. Which of these toss ups do you want to handle first?
Let's talk about the Oscars real quick, because I just saw this news. I think this is fresh. This is hot, hot out of the oven,
hot off the presses. You've maybe already heard of it if you're listening now.
Yeah, the 2019 Oscars are officially hostless. They're just going to be presented without a host. So they're going to put a fucking PowerPoint presentation up on the screen for 3 hours. And that's it. This is going to be weird, man.
Ricky Gervais, I think, had a joke at one of the Golden Globes. He's like, honestly, this is so awful. The best one was during the writer's strike where they just read the names. Like,
that's what's going to happen again. Like,
I think they're going to have different. I mean, it's going to be all presenters. Like, I am very interested to see what is going to happen at the very beginning. You know, who's going to introduce the show?
Yeah, what's the opening skit going to be?
Yeah, is it going to be Rob Lowe and Snow White again?
I just hope it means that it's less cringy than in past years, because like even when they had like Jimmy Kimmel host it was like there was some pretty cringeworthy humor throughout. I'm just like, oof, I feel bad for everybody involved in this right now.
Which is surprising considering it's movies. It's something like everyone has seen. You're literally, how can you not do 10 minutes of comedy about rich people? Like, that's why, honestly, I do think Ricky Gervais is the best presenter for these types of events.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's just like, I don't care. Like, you people are all rich. We should just be making fun of you the whole time.
Yeah.
So, but none of that this year. We'll see the Muppets could have done it. That would have been fun.
Maybe they will.
I hope so. I mean, the Muppets, let's be real. The Muppets would be amazing. It's ABC, so.
Yeah, and the Muppets are kind of like, they're not really too relevant anymore. This could put them back in the spotlight again.
Right, yeah, it's like picking Billy Crystal or something. It's like, this guy was in movies before. Some of you younger kids might not know who it is, but like,
how many young kids are watching the Oscars anyway?
Yeah, none. I mean, this year a whole lot because of Black Panther, you know, that's the plan. But I really don't think this plays very well for getting any new host. You know, if now there's like no opinion on the host. It's like,
yeah,
for Kevin Hart, who had this huge install base, you had that at least, you know.
Yeah.
But for this, it's like, oh, the movie show. Yeah. Well, I don't know.
I wonder how much money they're saving by not having a host.
I bet a lot of brands pulled out of having advertisements at the Oscars because there's no host.
You think? You don't think they pulled out because they were going to have Kevin Hart host with his controversial tweets?
No, I think that they pulled out. I think they're probably pulling out now. I think advertisers probably knew about this before, but maybe like a week before this.
Mm-hmm.
And they started like pulling out like, yeah, we don't, you know, because that's like the signal for a ceremony embroiled in controversy.
Yeah.
It's like, especially for something that's not like, oh, it's the Super Bowl and like Tom Brady said, fuck you to Sean McVay. And now they're like fighting. That didn't actually happen. But if there was like some huge like controversy going on about players in the NFL, people probably watching the Super Bowl a little bit more. But
they
alas.
Should. So what they need to do is they need to get Dwayne Johnson and Vin Diesel to host it together. That's how you get people to watch the Oscars.
I mean, Dwayne Johnson could definitely host the Oscars. Like he would probably be really good.
He would be really good. Actually, now that I think about it, would rather see Vin Diesel host the Oscars alone.
I want to see Sylvester Stallone and Arnold Schwarzenegger host the Oscars. I think that'd be pretty funny.
That would be pretty funny.
All right. This next toss up is pretty interesting. I've already talked about it on Twitter. It's Ben Affleck. He's out as the Batman pretty much officially. Is this like the official?
No, this is official. Like, I mean, he's come out and said, like, he tweeted from his own personal Twitter account, like, you know, I'm passing the torch on to the next Batman. Good luck with Matt Reeves and whoever's playing the next Batman in 2021 when the new Batman is scheduled to be released.
So RIP for Ben Affleck as Batman, the Batfleck.
Yeah. What a bummer. What a short-lived stint.
Right. And I felt like he, under the right circumstances, he could have been really, really good.
I mean, I think he was really good in Batman vs. Superman. And then I think it was really bad in Justice League because Joss Whedon kind of fucked up the entire character.
I think that he could have had more opportunities. Especially, I would have loved to see him as like a standalone Batman.
Yeah.
I really think Batman was the best part of Batman vs. Superman.
Yeah. I mean, it was his
besides
film.
Besides having to watch Thomas Wayne and Martha Wayne get murdered again for the millionth time.
Yeah, but this time it was actually done really well.
Yeah, it was in slow motion. You're right.
Also, a lot of visual parallels to Superman's funeral at the end of the film.
True.
But anyway. Yeah.
It was dark. It was raining.
Yeah.
I could see Zack Snyder like storyboarding and be like, all right, in this scene, it's raining because they're sad. And then later at this funeral, it's also going to be raining because.
But it wasn't raining.
If someone raises their hand and it's raining. It's always raining.
It wasn't raining. I love this
was
movie.
It?
I know this movie. Front to back. Fine.
Was it just overcast?
I'm upset that we never got to see Ben Affleck really interact with the rogues gallery of Batman. I think that sad that, like, I would have loved to see. I know, like, Jared Leto's Joker is kind of shit. I think there are some interesting aspects about it, but I would have loved to see his interactions with Ben Affleck's Batman in a solo Batman film. I think that could have been pretty interesting. I would have loved to see him go up against someone like Deathstroke. I know they just got Joe Magliano.
He did go up against Will Smith's character.
Like with three lines of dialogue.
Yeah, what's
Deadshot?
What's Will? Deadshot.
Yeah.
Yeah, Deathstroke, Deadshot. They're both assassins, sure.
They are both assassins. One is cooler than the other, though.
Right.
But yeah, I'm pretty bummed. I think that his stint as Batman was too short-lived. But I get why they did it, and I get why he wanted to be out. I think that he clearly didn't see much of a focus on WB's part with what they wanted to do as a character. And I think he just didn't want to be this guy that was like, you know, tossed around this universe like a pinball, going from like these crazy tonal shifts like that happened with Justice League. But
yeah, 100%. I think he saw the writing on the wall. And also, like, you saw how ripped Ben Affleck was in those movies. Imagine having to maintain that indefinitely for literally like 10 years. Like, how long has it been since Justice League?
Justice League was what, 2017? So 2 years?
just 2 years of just staying in insane shape for a movie that might not ever happen.
Christian Bale did it.
I feel like those movies happen a lot closer together.
2005, 2008, 2012. So yeah, 3 years and then 4 years. And that's still a decent gap.
It is still a decent gap, but I think that those were probably greenlit. It was like, hey, we're making the next one right now, Christian.
Yeah,
so
yeah, for sure.
Get in on this. He's like, all right, yeah, sure.
I'll also do this. You're a fucking Hollywood star. That's the one job you have, is to look good for the role. I feel like it wouldn't be that difficult. Like, also steroids. I mean, like,
yeah, true. Also steroids. But you think about like Ryan Reynolds for Deadpool. He's in pretty good shape.
Yeah.
He's very like toned, very small. Ben Affleck was big.
No, Ben Affleck is jacked. But also Ben Affleck is just naturally bigger than Ryan Reynolds.
True. But he's got the actual muscle mass. Like, you have to eat so much to maintain that.
I mean, The Rock does it.
You know? The Rock is also a crazy person. And that's also his like aesthetic. He's like,
yeah.
Like, if you saw The Rock and he weighed like 170 pounds, you'd be like, who's this guy?
Yeah.
Ben Affleck, you're like, oh, 170 pound Ben Affleck. Yeah, Chasing Amy, I remember that. All right,
yeah, it's when he smoked cigarettes. But man, dude, I'm upset. I wonder if the next Batman that they cast is going to be able to be as jacked as Ben Affleck. And like, that was one of my favorite things about Ben Affleck as Batman.
Him doing those pull ups and the
so hot. But also just the fact that he was like this is the first tank Batman that we've got, and to me this is what Batman is. Batman is a ninja tank. Like, he is as big as The Rock, but he can move as quickly as a fucking samurai, and it was awesome. I mean, really got to see that in that fight, that warehouse fight scene too. Like, he's an intimidating presence.
He's huge. Yeah, you see this big bat dude, and to have that like intimidation factor, I think he's always been described as, oh, this is a guy who's got so much money that the only things that he's ever focused on are making himself the smartest person and like the most jacked person.
Exactly.
Like, he is at his peak physically and mentally.
And he's been at his peak since he was like 20 years old. He's like 40 something now. He hasn't left. He stayed on top of that peak.
Yeah. So I think the real question is, do we go Batman Beyond?
I've heard rumors that they're doing a Batman Beyond animated film in the style of like Into the Spider-Verse. But I don't know if that happens. I don't think we'll ever get a live action Batman Beyond. I think that's out of the question. I would love it, but I don't think it's going to happen.
I think we could do what is that one? Is it called the Mask of the Joker?
Oh, Return of the Joker or Mask of the Phantasm?
It's the one where It's Batman Beyond, and you got old Bruce Wayne, and like the Joker like shows up.
Yeah, Return of the Joker.
Bruce Wayne's like, yeah.
That's a really good animated film, yeah. And Batman is just like, he's just like, what the fuck? I saw him die like 40 years ago.
Yeah, and he's kind of like, what's the Batman Beyond guy's name again? It's like Trent or Trey.
No, it's Terry. I forget his last name. Yeah. It's Terry something, but I forget his last name.
Yeah. And he's just like, who is this guy?
Yeah. And then Bruce is just like, he's the fucking Joker.
Yeah. Terry McGinnis.
Yeah. Terry McGinnis.
Is he really Irish? I felt like he was always slightly
He's
Asian.
Definitely not Irish. But also, that's the thing with, what's the name? Bruce Timm, that artist, all of his characters look Asian. Even Bruce Wayne looks Asian.
Yeah, he's got like an Asian. I'm trying to see a picture of Terry McGinnis, but it's all Batman Begins stuff right now.
Yeah,
it's all him in his costume. Yeah, but I think that could be really cool. Do like a little futuristic type dealy.
Yeah, I hear that I think Matt Reeves said on Twitter that he wants the next Batman to be like his Batman film is going to be focused more on like the intellect and detective side of Batman and less on the physical aspects. So I'm not really expecting the next Batman to be as imposing as Batfleck was.
Right.
But I would really hope that I would love to see him do like a horror Batman film, like one of the stories where he's just trapped in Arkham Asylum for a night and he just has to deal with like
a
serious house on serious earth. Oh my God. I love that story. I would love to see that adapted. That'd be so fucking cool. Get him. Oh my God. Get Ari Aster to adapt it. The director of Hereditary. Holy shit. Yeah. That's a pipe dream.
Yeah, that's a, that I'll say. So I made this tweet. I think this is a pretty good list. First of all, because I made it. First of all.
Yeah, I added to it.
Yeah, you added to it and make it way weirder. My whole point with this list, I want to do the potential Batman actors in order of least to most interesting. And so for the real list, just take the top two and the bottom two, and then you got a real list. So, I mean, that's how I designed it. Well, not yours, not your last two.
Oh, sure.
My last two.
Yeah. Okay, fine.
Yeah. Both of yours would be amazing. So in order of least to most interesting, I put Jamie Dornan, the guy from the 50 Shades movies. And I've seen him in Outside, and I think he's done some pretty good work.
You've just seen him outside?
Charlie Hunnam, outside of that series, yeah. Him, the worst thing that happened to, well, I guess probably the best thing that happened to their careers, Dakota Johnson and Jamie Dornan, was being in those movies where we're like, I don't know if these people can act.
Yeah.
And then them being in movies outside of it and be like, oh, okay, these people are real.
Mm-hmm.
So Charlie Hunnam from Sons of Anarchy and The Lost City of Z
and
fame.
And Pacific Rim.
I think he would be an interesting choice.
I could see him doing that.
Those are both for like the younger Batman. I think they could still do pretty young. And then number three is Matthew Reese, the guy from The Americans, who just won the Emmy and the Golden Globe for best actor in a TV series. That would be for an older Batman. But since they're going with the younger one, probably take him out.
I don't know if I could see him as Bruce Wayne.
Oh yeah, is it like an older, like you've never watched The Americans, right?
No, I'm just looking at his IMDb page right now.
He's really good at hiding stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean his whole role in The Americans was I'm hiding in plain sight as someone you would have never expect to have all the skills that I do.
Okay. Let me throw a wrench in your list real quick here. Bradley Cooper.
Interesting.
I think I could see that. I could see Bradley Cooper playing Bruce Wayne. I think he definitely has the charisma to be like Playboy. And if they're going for like a more detective, like more intelligent Batman, I think he could do that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, for older Batman, definitely.
Yeah. But go on. Number four.
Yeah. Number four. I think this one is actually pretty like this could happen. Robert Pattinson. Now, he's been on a real good run recently.
He has
a real
been.
Good run. And I feel like doing like a young, like out of it, you know, the Serious House on Serious Earth, him like out of his element and being like, oh, man, I thought I had control on this. Like, I'm really losing it right now. That could be a very interesting take on Batman.
I do wonder, though, like, so I would want him to get a little bigger just because I feel like Batman, he doesn't have to be like Batfleck Jack.
Oh, yeah.
But
I'm assuming that all of these people can get more jacked than they are right now.
Yeah.
That's the assumption.
That's true. Okay. Another wrench I just thought of.
Yeah.
What's his name? Aaron Taylor Johnson.
He's got a weird shaped head. And he's also...
I mean, so does Robert Pattinson. Robert Pattinson looks like a foot.
No, you're right. Yeah. Hey. great foot. I think the reason... So what I tried to do is take people out of... if they're already in a franchise, trying to take them out of it.
Okay.
Oh, wait. No, I was thinking of Nicholas Holt. Because he's the Beast.
Oh, yeah.
In X-Men. But Aaron Taylor, he's only done Kick-Ass, so he's kind of in the clear.
Yeah. And the most recent thing he was in was Outlaw King, and I think he was like beefy enough in Outlaw King. I mean, he was pretty beefy in Kick-Ass too, but...
Yeah, his voice is kind of like, I don't know if I would... he does kind of have a like a squeaky voice.
I want to believe that he would... I don't think his voice was that squeaky in Outlaw King, but I would love like if as Batman to disguise his voice as Batman was he just started doing his fucking Scottish accent. He puts on his American accent as Bruce Wayne, but he's just a Scottish Batman to confuse everybody.
I think it would have been really interesting if that's what Christian Bale did.
Yeah.
To put on like his
Cockney,
like,
Welsh accent. Yeah.
Swear to me. What's all this then?
Swear to me.
Yeah. It could be fun. Number five, which I think this one is probably, I'd be really into this, is having Steven Yeun from Glenn in The Walking Dead.
I would be into that. That'd be interesting.
I would be very, very interested with this because, you know, it's Batman is not like, all right, well, you can make the argument that like, oh, the Waynes came from old, old money and like old American money. They're based on like, the Rockefellers or whatever. Yeah. And that a lot of minorities do not have that kind of like legacy of money. Let's pretend that nobody gives a shit about that for a second.
Yeah.
This would be a really cool, I think this would be a really cool casting choice. And I think Stephen Yeun could really do it well in the same way that Robert Pattinson could do like the I'm out of my element, like I'm afraid stuff. But also Stephen Yeun's also a little bit, he's kind of built. He could do it, I think.
Yeah, I think I like that. I like the idea of Stephen Yeun as Batman. But if we're going for like an Asian Bruce Wayne, and I know like you would have to kind of change the mythos Batman a little bit, but I think there are ways to make it work if you write it smartly.
I think you just don't address it.
I don't know. I feel like I do like the Waynes being like part of this old American money, like it, like just because I'm a giant fucking Batman nerd, but like knowing that the Waynes started building up Gotham City from like the 1700s onwards, I think, and having that bloodline tied to like Gotham City, I think is pretty cool. That's a neat element of the Batman mythos. But I was gonna say, for an Asian actor playing Batman, I would love to see Daniel Dae Kim from he was in Lost and Hawaii 5-0. He's a little bit older than Steven Yeun, but I think he's got a much more,
I was thinking of him,
a square,
yeah,
jaw. I think he'd make a really good Bruce Wayne. More,
he could, yeah, he's 50, dude.
Perfect. Dude, Asian people just don't age. They don't age until they hit like 75.
And then they age all at once.
Exactly.
Please don't DM me your complaints, everybody. All right, so the moving on. And this one I thought about, and then I looked at it. Dave Patel, who, guess how old he is?
26.
He's 29. So, yeah, oh, you're wow. Right. I mean, okay. He's really young.
Yeah. Well, because he was only like a teenager in Slumdog Millionaire, right?
Yeah, I think he was like 18 or something. Yeah. Must have been like 18, right? If that was, I mean, when that movie came out, like 11, 13, it might come out like 13 years ago, I think, or something.
Yeah, was that 2007?
Six?
2006, 2007?
Yeah. No, it was 2008, I think.
Oh, okay.
It?
Yeah, it's over a decade
if it comes
old now.
Out, it, like if it comes out there, it's filmed, I mean, it's Danny Boyle, so it's probably filmed in maybe the year before. So he was like, yeah, 18 when that came out.
Yeah, I could see, I don't know. That's interesting. The last thing I saw him in was The Last Airbender. So I don't really have the best impression of him in my mind. He was good in Slumdog.
Right, I can only assume that I have not seen him in too many movies, but I can only assume that he's good in Lion. I mean, like, I feel like he's got acting chops.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure he does.
And that's, you know, like, who else? I think we've seen that a good actor can really mess up Batman, too.
Yeah. Are you talking about Ben Affleck?
No, I'm talking about George Clooney.
Oh, okay. Yeah. This is true.
All right. So now we're getting into the weirder part of the list. Idris Elba. Yeah, let's do it, man. Let's do it.
Yeah, if he can't be James Bond, let him be Bruce Wayne, man. Go for it. Idris Elba can play. Yeah. I would not give a shit. Idris Elba could play anybody. There could be a biopic about Scarlett Johansson, and Idris Elba could play Scarlett Johansson, and I would be there for it day one.
Yeah, oh, I'd be way, way there for it. It more so than if anyone else plays Scarlett Johansson. Because I bet her life is fine, but not that interesting.
But as soon as you get Idris Elba playing that role, it's fascinating.
It's fascinating. All right. And then number eight, Val Kilmer. Bring him back.
That's so sad. You can't. Val Kilmer, you know he has like throat cancer.
Oh, yeah. No, did you see The Snowman?
No, but I heard about that. I heard they like had to like redub all of his dialogue.
It's insane. It's so insane. It's, you cannot look up. I mean, I think it's on HBO. It's like 90 minutes long. It's one of the worst movies I saw last year. Like, it's so bad, but it's the perfect kind of bad where it's like, this is so bad. It's funny. You can tell they were really trying to do something.
Yeah.
And they failed like so bad.
Yeah. Okay. I do want to watch that because every, like, it's gotten so much negative press that it sounds hilarious.
Oh, yeah. And Michael Fassbender is in it. And it's like one of the biggest suspense novel series in Norway.
Yeah. His name is Harry Hole.
Yeah, they didn't change that.
Nope.
for the movie. It's like, hey, it's Harry Hole, the alcoholic cop. It's like, why do you still let him be? Like, because he's the best.
I love that the story goes that they forgot to shoot like 10 pages of the script or something.
Yeah, no, they ran out of time. They either forgot or they ran out of time, thought they would have more time. So there's large points of the script that are just not filmed.
Oh,
it's the
man.
Same guy who did Tinker Tailor Soldier
Spy.
Yeah, so
he's it's a talented cast, a talented director.
It had everything going for it. And not even that could help.
Yeah. I mean, hey, that's what happens. So,
yeah, so that's my list, really. And then we've got your two
long shots.
And
I would legitimately love to see one. Have we ever seen Tom Hanks like be jacked? Like, what's the closest Tom Hanks has come to playing a superhero?
A superhero?
Yeah.
Turner and Hooch?
I guess.
Just a regular cop.
I would love to see Tom Hanks in a role like this. I know that's like completely against type because Tom Hanks is always just like the everyman who just wants to get home at the end of the day. But I want
Tom Hanks could give Tom Hanks another 10 years and then he should be Alfred.
That'd be kind of funny.
He'd be a good Alfred.
He would be a good Alfred. I wonder how good his British accent is.
Yeah, it's probably fine. Castaway was probably the closest he's been to Jack.
Yeah. So emaciated.
Yeah. Oh, maybe like Saving Private Ryan.
I think he was like maybe a little bit bigger, but
definitely
not Jack.
But he still must have been like in a decent amount of like, you know.
Yeah, I'm sure they shape. Like. I think they made them go through like, you know, military training and boot camp and whatnot for that movie.
Yeah, like basic training or something like that.
Yeah. But yeah, I would just like to see him in a larger than life role. I think that'd be fun.
Oh, Forrest Gump. That's probably as jacked as he's ever been.
Probably.
And that's not that jacked, but
especially during just like the Vietnam scenes. We really get to see his guns.
He's in pretty good shape.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, he played a football player. He could run.
Yeah. But yeah, I think he would be an interesting Alfred. He's so friendly though. I just want to see someone that friendly play someone as like aggressive as Batman.
Yeah, I think
I want to see Tom Hanks unleash his rage. You know there's a rage bumbling underneath that like friendly surface.
Right, yeah, in 10 years he's gonna kill his whole family.
That's the scariest thing. It's like that's what would make him so terrifying in my eyes, is like whenever like a nice person breaks, that's when you have to run.
Right. Yeah. He's been nice his whole life, and then they made him break.
Yeah. He's been waiting for this moment his entire life.
Yeah. All right. We talked about Batman for literally like 20 minutes. Let's go in this low real quick of Liam Neeson telling a crazy racist story from his past for seemingly no reason.
Yeah, I don't. What even prompted this? I still don't have the full context of this interview, but like, what prompted him to say this?
It was on a press junket for the movie Cold Pursuit, which is a thriller comedy where he takes a snowplow and like, it's a revenge movie.
Yeah.
And so it was on a press junket, which these interviews are usually like not just like one on one. It's around like a whole bunch of people and they last for like 15 minutes usually. And so the interviewer asked him like, so how do you tap into this like revenge stuff? And he's like, well, 40 years ago, my friend was raped. Like, you know, yeah. Like, whoa, okay. Like, and she, I asked her, what it was, what do you look like? And she said, this. And he's like, well, what color was he? He's like, oh, well, he was black. And so I took I think he calls it like a gosh or something,
yeah.
Which is basically just like a nightstick, like a big, like pole type thing. And he's like, I went to black neighborhoods, walked around hoping somebody would try and pick a fight with me so I could murder them.
Yeah.
And then they're like, what? And he's like, well, that's all the time I've got. I'll see you guys later.
He just fucking bails afterwards.
Yeah. And it's like, what an insane story. First of all, there's a movie in there. First of all.
Yes.
Second of all, why? I don't know.
There's the thing, like, someone, he's clearly getting a lot of shit for it. And I think, you know, rightfully so. It was, he wanted to enact race-based violence, but also to be fair, he didn't. And it was also one during the during Ireland, like 40 years ago, during the Troubles, which is very different than it is today. And he also was dealing with the trauma of learning that his friend was just brutally and violently raped, and he had no idea how to deal with that type of emotion.
Yeah, it's like one of those. You remember in Minority Report, how they like the precogs have like solved all of crime in like DC.
Yeah,
and they only get like the crimes of passion at that point, where it's like you can't predict those because it's not premeditated. You can't even nobody's thinking about it until it happens, like right then.
Yeah.
So I mean, there's got to be some kind of like delirium, some rage that's I don't even know. That's also, like, you know, race relations, I assume, are different in Ireland than they are here. And that was what he was kind of trying to say, is like, oh, if she had said like, oh yeah, he was like a Protestant guy, or like a Catholic, or, you know, like a Lithuanian dude, or like a Welshman, he would have done the same thing. And I think that's where the question lies, is we don't know if he, you know, maybe. I have no idea, really.
I mean, these are all hypothetical questions. I think a lot of people are making the argument that he wouldn't, because, one, I think it'd be a lot harder to, like, or one, I think if that was the case, he would have done it, because I don't think you have to walk that far to find a white dude in Ireland.
Right. I mean, but it is segregated based on like Catholics and Protestants don't live together. Like those are the people who are fighting,
I guess. Yeah. You know, I don't know much about Ireland during the Troubles, other than it was a very violent time.
It was a war. It was a war between the Protestants and the Catholics. Yeah. You know, the Catholics on, don't maybe quote me on this, but I believe Northern Ireland is mostly Protestant. And the rest of Ireland is Catholic, and Northern Ireland is a part of the UK.
Yeah.
So you have a historically disenfranchised group, the Irish, of fighting against an imperial power. And then you've also got that it's broken up based on religion as well.
Yeah.
So there's a lot going into that. And I mean, it's a very bloody time in Irish history. It's what a crazy story.
Yeah.
I don't really know what else to say.
It just came out of nowhere too. Like,
yeah, I wonder, he must have had this bubbling up inside of him for a while.
I think that's part of it. Like, I feel like it was just, I'm sure he was ashamed of his actions. And then, cause this is something he could have easily taken with him to his grave and nobody would have known, because he didn't actually do anything, but he just wanted to talk about the fact that he was having those types of thoughts. And it seems like he just wanted to air it out and be like, this, like, I know this is wrong.
Yeah. And maybe that's the point of the movie, is that violence is wrong.
I mean, maybe, but I don't know. I do think there is an interesting thing. Like, I hope we get a Liam Neeson biopic at some point, because I think it's interesting that
he's had a really weird life, like a very traumatic life.
Very
too.
Traumatic life. And like the fact that he started doing these revenge films after his wife suddenly died as a form of like cathartic release, just like dealing with all that anger and rage with just the world in general by acting it out in film. And he's like, this is just, he calls it his therapy. Like, that's why he suddenly became an action star.
Right. And there is something to be said that, you know, acting out murders in real, in like, you know, for play, there is some, like,
I think there is some therapeutic value to
it. Some exposure therapy.
Yeah. I think a lot of people do it in video games too. And it's significantly better than, you know, doing it in real life.
Definitely. Yeah. It's way safer to fight a war online than in somebody else's country. Yeah.
Yeah. Plus, like, it's so easy to make little kids cry online.
Yeah, definitely. And it's really easy to make adults cry too. I know little kids make me cry all the time. Mostly crying myself to sleep nowadays after playing Rainbow Six.
Ooh.
And Minecraft.
And can't forget about Minecraft. It's a fucking,
yeah, a lot of griefing.
Brutal.
A lot of griefing. Absolutely brutal. So we've gone through all of our stuff. We've been going on this for a while. We haven't talked about this movie yet.
Because I don't think there's a whole lot to talk about with this movie. It's not that great.
Yeah, I mean, so that's what's this movie about? Well, tell me, give me the your synopsis of this movie.
Yeah, so this movie is called,
and why people would be interested in it.
It's called Velvet Buzzsaw, and it's an original horror movie for Netflix, directed by Dan Gilroy of Nightcrawler fame, and starring Jake Gyllenhaal, who is famous for a lot of different reasons.
Of
Nightcrawler fame as well. But the movie revolves around Jake Gyllenhaal plays an art critic, very pretentious art critic, but also very famous and influential, who is in a relationship with a couple different art dealers. And it really just takes place in the art world, with somebody finding the paintings of a recently deceased artist, selling those paintings off for a massive profit, and then having those paintings take on supernatural aspects and begin killing off the people who have been profiting off this dead artist's work.
Yeah, through other works of art.
Yeah.
Which is also a sometimes weird through his own work of art. Movie. Yeah, it seems like the rules of this movie are not very clearly laid out.
There are no rules. This movie is this is anarchy. This is the art world.
Honestly, I think this movie plays a lot better if it's a comedy.
I think it would have if it was like, if it committed to the comedy.
Yeah, because I was definitely watching it. I was watching it with my roommate, and at a certain point, I could see like he wasn't really enjoying it, and I was like laughing a lot.
Yeah.
And I was like, you got to see this. It's hilarious that all of these bad things are happening to this hilariously weird person. And then it becomes kind of funny. Like, I think there's a moment where he's in this room of seclusion, and he starts hearing all these things.
Yeah.
And then he comes out and he's like, what, you didn't hear? He's like, no, it hasn't started yet. It's about like whale noises at like 10,000 like feet under the sea from the Maria Trench.
Yeah.
And then they start playing the whale noises, and he's just like,
fucking bolts.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. He's like, in the background.
I don't know. I feel like that's the thing though, is this movie, there's so much potential for it to either be like this gonzo horror film or this gonzo comedy film. And I don't think it really commits to either side of the coin. And not to say like, you can't like, you could have done both. I feel like a horror movie set in a world as unique and like as eclectic as the modern art world, like the modern art world is just, it's ripe for satire. And that's something that that Dan Gilroy clearly wanted to do with this film. But I don't think it really like it hits. Here's an art pun. It hits the satire with broad strokes. Like there's nothing too particular about the commentary that Dan Gilroy is making in this film. And there's also nothing too striking about the visuals, in my opinion, either, which is kind of ironic because it's a film that's all about like art that's supposed to stick with you and like strike you visually. And I was just kind of bored throughout the entire thing.
Yeah. And the cinematography is done by Robert Elswit.
What has he done?
Which is There Will Be Blood.
Ooh,
for one.
Wow. Okay.
He's a big collaborator with PTA. I think he's his cinematographer of choice.
That's surprising.
But so, yeah, for a movie that looks really boring.
Yeah.
There's no visual flair. It's pretty standard. He also did Nightcrawler, Inherent Vice. Yeah, he's done.
Yeah, like Nightcrawler was significantly better shot than this film.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, Boogie Nights, Skyscraper, Mission Impossible, Rogue Nation. He did do Skyscraper. Okay, so he's not infallible.
Yeah. I feel like he's
Michael Clayton.
It really depends, I feel like, on the director then that he's working with.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's done a decent amount of things. It's just this movie has a lot of issues. It's got issues with pacing. It takes a while for it to reveal itself. What is going on in this movie?
It's like over an hour before anything of interest happens.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's fun to watch Jake Gyllenhaal play around in this character. He's obviously having a really fun time, and I think it's really fun to watch him do this character.
Oh, yeah, I think Jake Gyllenhaal is, like, the best part of this movie.
Oh, by a lot.
Yeah.
And that's not saying anything bad about him. He's just really good in this. He's really good in a lot of things that he does.
Yeah. My admiration for your work has completely evaporated.
Oh, yeah. And David Diggs is in this movie.
Right? But
I have no idea why.
I got so high. So here's the thing why I'm so disappointed, too, is because when the trailer first dropped for this film, I thought this was a surefire hit. Like, Dan Gilroy, Jake Gyllenhaal, David Diggs. This is a super cool concept. Oh, yeah. Like, this is a concept we haven't really seen before. And like the trailers, like it showed off like pretty much all of the creepy imagery that you saw in the film, and it made it look way better than it actually is.
Well, yeah, don't watch the trailer if you want to watch this movie, because it tells you every kill. Like it shows you all of the kills.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, the kills aren't even that creative. Like, I thought, like, you know, you could have had, like, Final Destination has more creative kills than any of these.
100%.
And these...
That's also what it's based on.
Yeah, but, like, this is just... someone on Twitter said, like, this is just the lower energy version of Final Destination. I'm like, you know, that's a pretty apt way to put it.
Right. Nothing really... Things just kind of happen, and you're kind of have these scenes where one character is left alone, and you're kind of like, all right, how long until they get... their like arms ripped off or whatever, yeah. You know, it's there's no, I don't understand what this movie's trying to say. And then it's got John Malkovich in it for no reason.
Right.
He doesn't really do anything really like Rean Russo. Like, I don't understand the relationships between the characters. Don't make any sense. Why, what the characters are there to add or to subtract. There are entire, you know, Daveed Diggs, you could take him, his entire character out of this movie, and it becomes a much more succinct movie, I think.
Yeah. Maybe you take
out Toni Collette's character, and it becomes a much more succinct movie.
Those characters only existed, I think, either for like the kill potential or because other characters needed to be in a certain place at a certain time.
Yeah. I mean, it does feel like a lot of things that happen in this movie are just setups for these murders. When you've got this hugely rich concept to go off of,
yeah,
really build that out. Let me see what's in there. I got a feeling that there is something that it wants to say about art and about criticism, but it ends up just being like, oh, you want to make money off art? You're going to be murdered in horrible ways.
Yeah, that was like, that's like the message I got from the end of the movie. It's like, don't make money off art. If you make money off art, it stops becoming art and it's going to destroy you eventually. I'm like, okay, is that it? Like, there are like hints of a deeper message. And I think like, I kind of got that a little bit with John Malkovich's character, but it's not developed anywhere. Like you get like one or two lines of dialogue about his backstory and why he matters in the grand scheme of things. But then like the entire end credit sequence is focused on him and like his character's arc. And I'm just like, this is coming up now. Like what?
Yeah. There are a lot of there is a funny bit that Natalie Dyer is in this movie from Stranger Things fame.
Oh, yeah.
She's the girl in Stranger Things. I can't remember what her name is.
The sister, yeah. I don't remember her name either.
Yeah, the sister. And she finds, like, every dead body. And
yeah,
it's
that's
just like...
The last one. It could have been running gag. And what does she say? She's just like, God damn it. Like, not again. Like,
yeah,
she goes,
like, oh, fuck.
Yeah, she goes like, from being, like, horrified when she sees the first dead body to just being like, oh, whatever. And I do think, like, that's another thing. I thought that this movie was gonna... I thought that it would have a little bit of commentary, like, on the audience taking pleasure in, like, watching these characters die these horrific deaths. Because I think that it felt like the artist that they steal from, the one who dies in the beginning, they reveal... I'm gonna spoil the movie a little bit, but also not that much, because there's really nothing to spoil in this movie. You find out that part of his paintings were painted with like his own blood. And I'm just like, so are we going to have a commentary on like taking pleasure in somebody else's pain for the sake of art? Like, is that what the movie's going to be getting at? But that didn't really develop at all. So I guess that was
but
just,
there are definitely blood paintings out there. Like,
oh,
that's,
yeah.
There are definitely artists who have painted with their own blood. I think maybe the movie left it a little bit ambiguous as to whether or not it was his blood.
Just blood in general.
Yeah, I mean, watch this movie, I guess, and you'll find out about all this like weird explanations that they have for all this nonsense going on. This movie really missed the mark.
Yeah.
On a lot of things for me, and the only thing really that kept me going was Jake Gyllenhaal playing this eccentric character. I felt like none of the other characters were as eccentric as Jake Gyllenhaal. He carried like the whole thing.
Yeah, they were all just like unlikable. Like Jake Gyllenhaal was the only semi-likable character, and he was only likable because of how like charismatic and eccentric he was. But everybody else was just like, the most boring version of like an art world caricature.
Yeah, I mean, for a movie that has Rian Russo, Jake Gyllenhaal, and Tony Collette,
also
and
it's John like a horror movie Malkovich.
And John Malkovich, like, and David Diggs. Like, this movie had everything going for it, really.
What happened, man? I'm so disappointed. I was so hyped for this movie.
I really think that Netflix needs to give better notes or something. Yeah. Like, somebody needs to be on the quality control, because I think once we get to the point where you have a lot of different streaming services all for $10 a month, it's going to be like, all right, I need to choose. And right now, I don't know if I choose Netflix out of, you know, between HBO, Hulu, Amazon Prime.
Oh, HBO, I think, still number one. If you're going to choose only one streaming service,
quality, yeah.
Netflix, I think, and it depends on what you're looking for. You know, if you're looking for like a really big back catalog, I think Netflix still has it down. I think they're still the first choice for anybody that wants to watch Friends over and over again or The Office. But yeah.
Which, if you want to do that, why are you listening to this podcast, yeah. guys? Why are you trying to learn about new stuff? There's old stuff out there for you, man.
Yeah. Go watch The X-Files for the 12th time. But
I think they're off of Netflix now, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. They're probably on Hulu because of the reboot.
Yeah.
But yeah. But yeah. Netflix.
I need to get me a Hulu with no commercials.
What's that?
I need to get myself a Hulu with no commercials, because right now we have Hulu, but it's the commercial version, which I'm like, is this what am I watching?
I guess. But it's like commercials? It's cheap. You know, it's only like $7. It's still cheaper than cable. I think.
You could have Netflix, HBO, and then Amazon Prime is different because it does other things.
Yeah.
You get like that free 2-hour grocery
delivery. Yeah, like I don't pay for Amazon Prime for the video aspect. That's just a bonus. I pay for Amazon Prime because I want shit delivered to me same day.
Yeah, that's what it's all about.
Yeah.
Back to this movie.
I don't think it's worth, not even worth your time. Like, it's a Netflix film and I don't think it's worth your time.
Yeah. It's free if you have Netflix, and it's not worth your time.
Yeah.
Like, you could be watching, like, you don't have to pay for it.
Yeah.
Even the cost of 1 month of Netflix is too much for this movie, I feel like.
Yeah. The only way I would say it's worth your time is if you are the person that just spends all of your Netflix bandwidth watching Friends or The Office. Like,
yeah, then please see a new movie for once. Jesus, yeah. Get into the culture. It's leaving you behind, man. There's been other stuff. I can't wait till Netflix's deal with Friends and The Office runs
out.
It's
never running out. No, dude, they're going to be that. That's like their main source of subscribers, is just people that are like, oh, I want to watch that again.
No, I'll tell you, because NBC is making their own subscription.
Oh, you're right.
Service.
They are.
Ooh. And you think that they're going to be like, oh, hey, Netflix, I know you got this thing that everyone wants to watch all the time.
That's going
to
be interesting.
Yeah, it'll be. This is where it gets interesting, because you have.
The streaming wars are starting.
Right. I mean, it's the exact opposite thing of what the companies tried to say, like, oh, vertical integration, it won't be a big issue.
Right.
Because, like, oh, we just own the same stuff. Like, oh, now it's actually about owning this content. And you have it's a little bit trickier now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So overall, for a film flick, thumbs down on both.
Yeah. Two thumbs down.
Don't see this.
Thumbs down on both aspects. Like, this was a huge bummer. I guess if you're just that into Jake Gyllenhaal, it's worth a watch because he is fun in this movie.
And you get to see him naked, pretty much. He doesn't hang dong, but you get
pretty close. You can infer from the shots in this movie what his dong is like.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. I think, does he do like nudity in Love and Other Drugs?
I've never seen Love and Other Drugs. Does Anne Hathaway do nudity in that?
Yeah, I remember a lot of sex scenes in that movie.
Yeah, I believe, I mean, if she's nude, then I'm guessing he gets nude. Does he get nude in Brokeback Mountain?
No, I remember they keep it pretty implied.
Oh, okay. I guess that was 2005, you know, can't be that edgy.
Right, and you know, we know that the whole thing, it's two gay guys, so they can't be naked together.
Yeah. It was also advertised as like a cowboy drama. It's the funniest thing to me.
Imagine walking into that movie thinking it's about cowboys.
Right.
Like, wait, what? Wait, what?
No, stop, wait, what? Stop.
No, yeah. That's assuming everybody who likes cowboy movies is a homophobe.
Everybody likes cowboy movies is a Trump supporter. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I believe it.
But yeah, so
what are we going to see next? What are we going
to
see next?
I think we got a couple options. I think we're going to have to see the Lego movie part two. And I think we got to see Cold Pursuit.
I am definitely okay with that. I need to rewatch the Lego movie. I feel like it's been so long.
It's been like 5 years. It's a long gap.
Yeah. Wow.
I guess unless you count like, you know, the Lego Batman movie or the Ninjago movie, all the spinoff movies. Man.
Lego Batman. What a great movie.
Lego Batman's amazing. I can't wait for Lego Batman 2.
Yeah, it was a big surprise to me seeing Lego Batman end up being good.
It's the funniest thing is that movie was directed by one of the big alumni of Robot Chicken. And as soon as I learned that, I was like, oh, this makes perfect sense. It's like the same sense of humor.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's really funny. Go see that movie.
Yeah.
Everybody. All right.
Hopefully it's a slow news week next week because we're doing a double feature.
Yeah. Double feature. Well, all right. I'll do my little sign off. You can follow me at the Dan Leo Show, and then follow me on Letterboxd. It's D Leo. That's the username. And then you know the podcast website, viewingangles.podcast.com. Subscribe, rate, etc. You know how it goes.
Yeah, retweet.
Oh, that's my cough. What about you, Rob? How do the people know about you?
Follow me on Twitter and Letterboxd and Instagram at Robert Jr. JR. And remember to check out our merch section on the site. I'm going to be uploading some new designs pretty soon here, so keep an eye out for that.
Ooh, new merch. Mm-hmm. I use the mug a lot. The mug is legitimately... Not that the shirt isn't also legitimately good, but the mug is one size fits all. It's great.
It holds coffee.
Really
it holds tea.
It holds coffee.
It's great.
Yeah, it's a high quality mug with a high quality design.
Yeah, it looks kind of like modern art if you just look at the Japanese characters from the one side.
We don't deal in value. We peddle perception.
Ooh.
Locking it out with a quote. Let's get out of here before we ruin it.
Before we get copyright striked.
Bye!